And hello, we're back. Not with our fearless host, Sam Blazer, but it is Allison Lucan, and I'm joined tonight by Matt Suva. Matt!
Hi, Allison. Welcome to hockey season.
Hockey is here. We are watching GIFs of live hockey while we record tonight.
Feeling very jealous.
Indeed. But tomorrow night, Jackets hockey is back.
It's true. Or tonight, if you're listening to it the day it comes out.
Well, true. Good point.
Time is weird.
And with that in mind, even though Sam couldn't join us, Matt and I wanted to do maybe a special episode. A special episode.
Special?
You're too young to remember a special episode of After School Special.
I am too young to remember that. I'm sorry.
So, but we wanted to focus on maybe doing what you could call a Stats 101, if you will. Is that fair to say, Matt?
A primer, maybe.
Ooh, that's a much better word. Mm. Primer. We just kind of wanted to lay a foundation for folks to maybe understand some of the concepts and terms we throw around quite a bit, or that you might see in our in-game tweeting or coverage.
Yeah, we are generally a Blue Jackets blog, and a lot of the time we tend to include numbers and talk about numbers, and it has occurred to us, and we mentioned this on the Cannon Fest episode, it has occurred to us that we may or may not ever really go into what we mean and some of the problem in terms of stats coverage from anybody is not taking a step back and trying to bring people in, make other people feel more welcome around the numbers. And hopefully what we accomplish in this little episode will be bringing you aboard, getting you on board with what the numbers are, and hopefully we can try to be welcoming about this, because we were new at stats once upon a time, too.
It's true.
And the important thing is, and hopefully we come across the right way in this, if you have questions, if you're concerned, if you're saying, Matt, Allison, the absence of Sam, what is happening? I don't understand why you're saying this. Ask. We love questions. We love to answer questions.
Absolutely. So tweet us, comment on the blog post, the podcast, send us an email. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
But what do you say we dive right in, Matt? How do you feel about that?
So I think let's give a little structure to this.
Let's do that.
We'll talk first about hockey, mm-hmm. why to kind of set ourselves.
We can usually do that okay.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes.
True.
Then we'll talk a little bit about what those numbers are that matter and why we care about them. Some numbers that we can't really control, or players can't really control. And some overarching conclusions about this. And then maybe where you can find numbers to start playing around yourself.
Awesome. I think that's great. Let's go into it.
Let's
you think?
Let's do it.
All right. So first, that thinking about the game. There's some key things when it comes to hockey. And I think it's important that we emphasize that this shows that we're all watching for the same purpose. Mm-hmm. What do we care about, Matt, when we're watching the game, whether it's from a stats perspective or a non-stats perspective?
We want our favorite team to win.
And what goes into winning?
Well, usually goals. Outscoring the other team tends to, you know, result in winning.
Absolutely. So all of this thinking is about scoring goals regardless of whether we use the numbers or not. Fair to say?
I think so.
Awesome. So when it comes to scoring, though, the puck just doesn't naturally appear in the net behind a goaltender, eh?
That's true.
So one of the things that we like to use stats for is to look at some other things. What are some of the things that stats can help us look at if we're interested?
Well, we can think about who's doing the scoring, individual points, goals, and assists, scoring or setting up scoring, I guess. We can think about stopping goals against. Goalies in particular are a way of thinking about that. And we can think about that on both a player and a team level.
Mm-hmm. So far, hopefully you're still with us. These are the questions that we're trying to answer when we look at the numbers, if you will, or the fancy stats, some people call them, behind everything is, how can we expect or hope that behaviors we see and can measure can tell us that we might end up scoring goals and thus hopefully scoring more goals than the other team and thus hopefully winning the game?
I think that's fair.
Cool. So there are a couple things that if you're interested in stats, you'll probably start to hear a lot about, maybe as a fun joke, but they are important principles that we want to make sure everyone understands when it comes to the real math side of the numbers. And the first one's sample size.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt, you and I were talking about that just before we started recording. What's so important about the concept of sample size?
Well, so in any of this discussion, we're trying to look at things that help us better understand what's happening and maybe even predict what's going to happen next. And if you're using only a small set of games, it's hard to know if that's really indicative of what's happening. If goalies are a great example. You can cherry pick a couple shutout games, but no goalie is going to be perfect all the time.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that is done by much smarter people than me. They're actually probably just as smart as fine Matt over here.
Probably smarter than me at statistics.
Matt is very smart. But the reason that sample size matters is that when we want to look at things that we can statistically prove help us predict a better chance of winning a game, you need a lot of information to find the true answer of if it's predictive or not.
It's also worth noting that this is a lot of probabilistic kind of thing. This is not That's certainty. It is.
It's a good word.
So saying that a team is more likely to win a game for doing something, which we'll get to, that doesn't mean they're guaranteed to win. There are a range of results that could happen. So the overarching idea behind what we'll get to in terms of shot metrics, that's about what's more likely, what's a more likely outcome, and what can help us think about what's more likely to happen next.
Absolutely. So the takeaway so far is we all want to win hockey games mm-hmm. by scoring more goals.
This is true.
By understanding the behaviors that help us score more goals than the other team.
Yes.
And it's important that we understand that if we use numbers, they're just predictive. They're not certain. Mm-hmm. And we have to look at a lot of examples to make sure we found the right piece of information to tell us what matters.
Yes.
Excellent. So let's talk about what matters. And you started to talk about this a little bit, Matt, but you know, we throw around a lot of words about shots and shot attempts. And there's an important reason that we look at that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So back in between 2008 and 2011, on a couple of fan-driven blogs, a lot of them happened to be Oilers blogs, there were statistical findings about the information in the real-time scoring sheets that the NHL produces. These are sheets that you can find, although it's harder to find, on the new NHL.com, that have information that shows what has happened, events that happened on throughout the game, and who was on the ice for that to happen for each team. So shots, blocks, missed shots, that kind of thing. And a guy by the name of Tor Purdy, who went by the username Jay Likens, he shared findings that showed that shot differential, that is, so for example, Blue Jackets. If the Blue Jackets get 30 shot attempts on goal and they're playing the Bruins and the Bruins get 25, the differential for the Blue Jackets is plus 5. So Tor Purdy showed us that that shot differential within a season for, say, maybe the first half of the season, that's a better predictor of what's going to happen in the second half of the season than the goal differential is.
That's right. And I think what's important to understand is if you're listening to this right now, you're probably saying, well, of course. And that's the fun of a lot of statistical findings, right? Is these are things that we know, and it's cool to see that a lot of times science shows us that what we think we know is true. Now, yeah. There's fun that sometimes we get surprised, but a lot of times we show it's true.
And it's important to note also that this doesn't mean the past results went away.
Good point.
So if you're rooting for a team that isn't doing so well in the shot battle, but they've built up a lot of points and they're doing okay in the standings, those standing points don't go away. They still matter. We still want to see the team make the playoffs. It's just, can we feel confident that this is going to happen going forward? That's the question that's being addressed.
And you know, this speaks to a little bit to why we spoke about sample size, because one of the things that's important about shot attempts, and just to throw some definitions in real quick.
Let's do it.
Is that, you know, we talked about volume of data mattering mm-hmm. for us to be able to know something is true. And, you know, one of the things that actually brought me into the stats community was this concept of Corsi. Because, again, it just made sense to me, which is when you look at shots on goal, either on, you know, the scoreboard or on the screen when you're watching on TV, those are just shots on goal, which means the goalie interacted with the puck. Mm-hmm. So that's, in my opinion, even before I knew stats, not really a good representation of what a team is trying to do offensively. I said even before I knew what Corsi was, I'm like, why don't they count every attempt that they try and shoot? Mm-hmm. Well, that's what Corsi is, my friends. It is simply shots on goal plus missed shots plus block shots. So it's any time someone tries to take a shot, that's a Corsi point or a shot attempt, mm-hmm. if you will. And if you want to look at things a little bit differently, you can use the word Fenwick, which is the same as Corsi, without block shots. So it's shots on goal plus missed shots.
And you can talk about these either as a net total, so for a team or for a player, the number plus or minus that they have, or as a percentage. So if you have 50% of the Corsi events, a 50% Corsi 4 percentage, you'll sometimes see, that means you've broken even. You're at an even level. Above 50%, you have more shots, shot attempts than the other team. Below 50%, the other team has more shot attempts against you.
Absolutely.
And sometimes these get called possession numbers or possession stats. And that's more used as explanation rather than outright definition. So there isn't really a timer keeping track of each team. You'll see that in some video games, that there's a timer for right. who had the puck more often. But possession here is more used as an explanation. So the shot differential kind of relates to that in terms of what's happening on ice. The Maple Leafs blog Pension Plan Puppets once did this with a stopwatch and found it was a pretty good relation. So it makes sense. If you have the puck more, you have more chances to shoot it, which is where that explanation comes in. And you can think about that in either direction you'd like. So you can think about, if you are gaining more shot attempts when you're on offense, that means you're shooting more. That means you're getting more scoring chances, better chance of getting the puck on the net, better chance of getting goals, which is the ultimate thing we're looking for. On the other side, if you have a defensive structure that helps prevent the other team from taking shots, maybe disrupting entries in the defensive zone, which we'll think about a little later, if you can help limit the shot attempts against your team, that helps improve your chance of winning too.
That's right. And that is can be shown by, and we're going to put all these links in the show notes, mm-hmm. like Matt said, but a fine gentleman who now works for the Hurricanes in Carolina, Eric Tulski, actually was the first person to show us how that shot differential matters. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. So what's important to understand is we're going to start with some pretty basic, truly defined terms, and we're going to go into some things where when we talk about these terms, some of these rely on calculations or different definitions that people use. One of the examples I want to just talk about quickly was scoring chances. Depending on the resource that you use, different scientists and mathematicians and hockey minds use different terms for scoring chances. So if you start using some of these terms that are a little bit more loose, and we'll try and note that as well, just make sure you understand the definition that the source you're using uses for that term.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have to do all of these calculations.
Correct.
As Allison has alluded to, at the end of this episode and in the show notes, we will list a lot of the resources that we like in terms of getting these numbers and some places that are writing about new ways of thinking about these numbers.
So understanding that we have these numbers that we can measure at either a team or a player level, we can use those to look at two teams playing each other, but there's another idea that we can use to look at players within a team. Matt, what's that?
Yeah, so if we want to think about, so we can use these to predict in a team level, generally speaking, more shot attempts means a better chance of winning. We also might want to think about, well, which players are making the most contribution to that? We know goals and assists, we can find that in terms of contribution. But another way to think about it is in terms of relative performance. So if we take a baseline level, the average for that team, we can see how much higher or lower that player is. So we can take the average Corsi 4 percentage for the Blue Jackets. The amount above or below that average level is whatever that player's relative Corsi performance is.
Absolutely. And one thing that's cool about Corsi 2 and some of these terms we've told you about, you might see CF for Corsi 4, FF for Fenwick 4. You'll see an REL is usually the accepted standard for relative. And another thing that's interesting to note is that when you see Corsi at a player level, it's usually measuring it for the team when that player is on the ice. Mm-hmm. If you want to understand how many attempts an individual is actually taking, that's going to be called individual Corsi 4.
Yes.
All right. So in general, we've talked about shot attempt differential. These are things that you'll often see us post in some visuals. We love to show shot attempt graphs. Those are things I often post mid-game on Twitter. But again, this is all about looking at the number of shot attempts that you're taking or limiting your team to limiting your opponent to, excuse me, both at a player and a team level to understand the likelihood that you can have a positive outcome to the game.
Yep. And when we talk on the podcast, or when we have talked in the past, we've generally given it more broad language, mm-hmm. saying shot attempt differential. When we're posting articles and when we're sharing where we got our data from, we tend to be a little more precise. And if you have questions either way, feel free to reach out and say, hey, I know you kind of said what that was, but what exactly do you mean?
Absolutely. So we started with perhaps not only the beginning of where fancy stats started, which was Corsi and Fenwick, but also things that are probably the easiest to latch a hold on to when you're getting started. Now we're going to talk about some of the cooler innovations that Hockey Stats has brought to us, but they're a little bit more complicated in terms of how they're actually figured. So we're going to try and explain what they really mean. Is that a good transition for us, Matt, to this next section?
I think so.
So these are kind of the factors that you can't control on the ice, and some of the things that we look at from an analytics perspective to understand that. One of the big things that we always hear when you talk about numbers is, well, you can't account for luck. You can't account for puck luck. What do we do about that, Matt?
Well, it's hard to grasp, because when you think about sports, you would rather feel that the better team won if they won a game, or the better player won if it was one-on-one. I won, you lost, so I'm better. But that, it almost sounds like whining if you say, well, you got lucky, I'm probably better. Let's take this as an example. So the best goal scorer in the NHL, I think we can all agree, is Alex Ovechkin.
Yes.
He did not have a goal in 39 of his 70 or so games last year. That includes a couple games where he had two or three goal scoring showings. So it's kind of scattershot. He's the best goal scorer on the planet, and even he is not perfectly consistent. So that is where percentages come in terms of shooting percentage and save percentage. And as it turns out, players tend toward their averages, but they don't really have a lot of control over either level in the short term. At the extremes, sometimes, but in general, even those don't last all that long. So the example that we like a lot is the Nick Foligno example, Blue Jackets captain Nick Foligno. He's a man who's experienced both extremes of shooting percentage.
In just the last 2 years, in fact.
Yes. So 2 years ago, we got to see 30 goal scorer Nick Foligno. He had an overall shooting percentage around 17%. So 17% of the shots that he got on goal went in. Last year, not such a good year by most accounts, only 8%. It's not as if he wanted to score any more or any less either year. It was just puck luck. And that's unfortunate to phrase it that way, but it's hard to account for what's happening there to cause it. Maybe there are some kind of injuries happening. Maybe there are some structural changes to how the team is. But in general, it's hard to account for where that shooting percentage is coming from.
Absolutely. And there's a couple things that are interesting to note about that. Something else that you could argue a team can control, but not always completely, and that's penalty minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the ways that you'll see us talk about numbers when we want to try and eliminate that variability of how many penalties are going to happen in a game is strength state.
Mm-hmm.
So even it's funny, even if you look at Nick Foligno, the percentages Matt shared, 17 and 8, are all situations. And when you take it to even strength, or 5-on-5, which is usually all even strength situations, those numbers reduce, but they're still showing the extreme. But we will often talk about scoring state, so even strength, because what that does is that removes the situation where it's not five players against five players, and there's not an advantage that necessarily couldn't be controlled
mm-hmm.
by normal play. You might also hear when you talk about things that you can't control is something called PDO.
Yes.
Which is a fun number that PDO actually stands for nothing. That's
true.
A fun fact. But what PDO is it's a number that is actually meant to represent luck or puck luck, like Matt said. So we already heard the story of Nick Foligno, who had an extremely high shooting percentage, even for him. PDO is literally taking shooting percentage plus goaltender save percentage. The more they are over 100, the higher your luck. 100 is normal. So the higher you get above 100, you have some pretty good puck luck coming your way because the averages are just high. And if they go below 100, hopefully pretty soon the bounces start going your way. It's just a way to accommodate for luck because ultimately, back to sample size, the more and more shots you have, everything's going to equal out to 100 as far as save percentage and shooting percentage.
Yep. And it's also worth noting, if a player has a really high shooting percentage, it's not as if we should expect the rest of the season to be super low to balance it out.
Great point.
It's more that we're expecting they'll be their average the rest of the way, which is lower than it was at start, but still not horrendous necessarily. Same way with low shooting percentages. If a player is really low to start a year, that doesn't mean we should expect super high to make up for it. It just means going back to average will be higher than the present.
That's right. So another thing that we can't control necessarily when we look at some of this information is what the score is at any time. So there's a fun thing that's a concept that's important to understand that's called score effects. And this is going to be another one that when we explain it to you, you're going to say, well, of course that makes sense.
It's totally intuitive.
But it has been proven to be a mathematical fact. So isn't that exciting? But you already know this. If a team is ahead, most of the time, that team is going to go into a defensive shell, right? They're going to play to protect the lead. And the team that's behind, why do we pull the goalie? We pull the goalie so we can get an extra skater, so we can push harder, so we can try and catch up. It's all about shooting more, trying to get that goal, trying to get that game-tying goal. So score effects is really that concept, and you can blame it on whichever side you want, mm-hmm. the sides that's going into their shell or the side that's pushing too hard.
Little both, maybe.
But it is about the fact that most of the time in hockey games, and again, when you think about the statistical value of these numbers, games are played close to a tie. We all know hockey is not like football. We aren't seeing double-digit scores on both sides, mm-hmm. usually. But when the score starts to flip or become a little bit more broad in the difference between the two, it causes those shots to change around. So to accommodate for the fact that one team will usually turtle and one team will usually become more aggressive when the score is different between the two teams, many of the sites that we're going to share with you guys at the end of this today, they will offer something called score adjusted numbers, which means that they have done highly complex equations that smarter people than me have proofed and validated in the scientific community to adjust the numbers we see as far as shot attempts and all the other numbers to accommodate for the score differential in the game.
The idea is that you don't want to throw away any information necessarily. Yes. And we know most of the time the game is played, or the game of hockey is played, in a very close, tied kind of state. So it's made to give that more weight and then give slightly less weight to games that are one goal apart and slightly less weight to games that are two goals apart, because that involves one team pushing harder than the other or one team being more defensive than the other. So it's to include as much information as possible while still understanding that some of the information is more important.
Absolutely. Told you guys Matt was smarter than me. You see that? See how he does that? So there's one other place, which is something that we can't control, and it's also perhaps one of the least understood areas of statistics right now.
And maybe the most important, depending on your team.
Totally agree. And it is the fact that goalies are not voodoo. We just don't know how to look at their performance in a meaningful way 100% yet. Matt, tell us what we do know about goalie stats.
Okay, we've mentioned his name before, Eric Tulski. We'll share this in the show notes. He has a piece that he put on SB Nation on his then blog called Outnumbered, telling us about how we can forecast goalie performance. And the real big takeaway is that we don't have a lot of certainty. So one of the best ways to forecast what's going to happen next for a goalie is to look at their past performance in terms of save percentage, and probably even strength save percentage, considering all the score effects and that, and then considering the power play or penalty kill will cause a big difference. So the more shots a goalie has faced over his career, the more certain we can be that that save percentage value is closer to the real talent level. But how much does that tell us about future performance? So this is something we can consider Sergei Bobrovsky as an example. Prior to last season, his whole career, Philadelphia and Columbus, Bob had a 928 even strength save percentage. That's a little higher than the 922 or 924 range that's about the NHL average. And he had faced around 5,400 shots at even strength. On Tulsky's article, we can take a look, and his method suggests that a decent guess for Bob's talent level is around 927 or so, but that comes with a lot of uncertainty. There's an error range of plus or minus 006. So last season, Bob dropped a bunch, down to a 916 even strength save percentage on the year, which was even outside the range of certainty from Tulsky's method. So we're kind of left scratching our heads. And we can expand this even a little further. If we think about any NHL starter or even any NHL backup, most goalies are able to come in and pitch a shutout at least one night, and then they could even turn around and be sub 900 the next night. So this is where the phrase goalies are voodoo comes up. It's not that goalies themselves are these weird mystical beings necessarily, although maybe they are. it's that we still don't have great ways to forecast what's going to happen for a netminder. And this is important, or bad if you're a Blue Jackets fan, because goalies are a big deal. If you have one that's playing really well, they may pull you all the way to the playoffs on their own. If you have one that's not doing very well, you lose the first 8 games of your season and things go bad very quickly.
Crazy narrative you have there. Just come up with that one on your own.
Who would ever imagine?
I don't know.
It's also worth noting that there is new stuff happening in terms of goalie study. Nick Mercadante, who is at
N Mercad
on Twitter. He's at Blue Shirt Banter, he writes, and he also writes on Hockey Graphs. Mm-hmm. He has developed a 5-on-5 goals saved above average metric, and we'll share that in the show notes. There's still more to be done. He suggested he's going to share more that he introduced at RIT this past year in sometime this season.
Yeah, and one thing that I've learned is when it comes to goalies and understanding what they do, find someone who understands goaltending. The numbers just don't do it justice quite yet. And if you're going to use a number, the best number to use is save percentage, as Matt just explained. But goaltending is made up of so many unique components. And what we're about to talk about that's not even happening consistently at a hockey play out level yet, that's really going to need to start happening for goaltenders before we can understand the magic of what they really can do. But you can learn a lot by talking to a goaltending expert. It's pretty cool to understand the aspects of their game. One of the things we want to talk about, too, before we get into, you know, more of where you can find this information and how to use this information, is kind of the new frontier. Because what happened when it comes to things you can't control is that the analytical community had realized, well, we've got these numbers, but we're still not really seeing all the variables can happen.
So it's a big question of, we know what causes winning or losing goals. We have some idea of what may predict future winning and losing in terms of shots, shot differential. But why is a particular player really good at that? Why is a particular team really good at that? What impacts the ability to be better or worse at some of these levels? There's a suggestion, of course, that a certain degree of talent is involved for any given player. Certain players are just stronger on a puck, faster, whatever ability to see the game or think the game. Not easy to quantify those necessarily, but there's other steps that are happening to think about some of the systems in the game.
That's right. And so when you start to hear things like tracking passes or tracking zone entries, what we're really talking about is really starting to understand the behaviors that lead either to offense or to the prevention of offense. And I think it's interesting, even in talking with John Tortorella this season, you know, he's looking at his defensemen to really become players in all three zones. There isn't just one role anymore. There's a goal of leading to offense and preventing offense of the other team. That's really kind of the story that he's telling. So when it comes to these micro stats, as you'll hear them called, passing, zone entries, denying zone entries, other kinds of tracking, the whole idea is that if you have the puck, you don't want to give it up. So that's why controlled exits matter, because you're controlling the puck. and you're entering the zone with control, because that gives you a better chance at getting a shot off, which, as we know, gives you a better chance of scoring a goal.
And you can think about it the opposite way, too.
That's right.
If I'm defending, I want to make sure the other team has a really hard time leaving their defensive zone, or that they're forced into dumping the puck into my defensive zone when they're trying to transition to attack. It's a question of who's able to get more meaningful possession out of whatever play they're doing, who's able to generate plays that result in more shots and more goals.
That's right. And so when you hear about things like this, these are things that we'll talk about a lot. I will talk about them a lot, usually in game. It's about tracking the behaviors that hopefully can tell us what's going to be successful in the systems that the teams are playing in. One thing I want to be careful to note here too, very quickly, is that a lot of what we've talked about, and we already told you goaltenders are probably the least understood statistically, a lot of what we've talked about is offense-minded. And it's important to remember that. My holy grail right now is how we can really understand the impact of a good defenseman, right?
Yeah.
Because understanding defense is still perhaps the second most uncharted territory right after goaltending. And so I think that that's just important to note when we talk about these things, that a lot of this, and understandably so, goals win games, is offensive minded right now. There's still so much more to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've probably missed some probably key concepts. I had one in my head and I've forgotten it, but we'll just keep talking. We wanted to focus on some conclusions or some takeaways. One of the first ones I'll offer too is, hopefully if you've listened to some of these explanations, you realize that this is not data that's coming from computers. This is watching the game. So it does mean that people are watching the game. And I think it's important to note too, that just because we've talked about a lot of numbers, this does not mean that there aren't intangibles. In fact, there's a lot of really cool work being done on the human science side of things to look at understanding leadership, understanding motivation. Those are all real things, things that we talk about with grit and heart. Those are real things, and understanding their impact. We're not talking about robots playing hockey.
No.
We're talking about humans. And so being a human matters, and human characteristics matter. We like to call them unmeasured characteristics, because mm-hmm. they're just cool little things, but they do matter. We're not saying they don't. But as far as the game of hockey, Matt, what are some conclusions we can draw?
Hockey is a very fluid sport. If you're listening to this, unless you've stumbled across it by accident, you are certainly a hockey fan. And there is no perfect way to analyze the game. There are so many ways that you can approach hockey. But at least from our perspective, we like to dig a little further. We like to ask questions about why. We want to think about what might happen next. And in that way, at least for me, that's how stats drew me in. You don't have to like stats to enjoy hockey. It's the same way Sam and I have had this discussion lots of times on here. You don't have to like fights to like hockey. You don't have to fit any particular shape or expectation or anything. If you like something about hockey, that's cool. But if numbers pique your interest, or if you want to explore a little further, thinking about shot differential has helped reframe the way I approach hockey. And thinking about quantifying that information is a fun way to go a little further and kind of ask yourself, can I prove what's being done out there? Can I prove what's happening or not? And as another note, there is no perfect statistic.
True that.
In baseball, a very popular statistic is WAR, wins above replacement. But even that is imperfect in baseball. In hockey, there's a huge balance of information that you need to consider to give a full picture. So, for example, Alex Ovechkin, Steven Stamkos, great goal scorers. No question about that. But what about Patrice Bergeron? He's not all that far behind in terms of goal scoring ability, but he's a shot differential god. So which one do you pick? Mm-hmm. What do you prefer? There's no right answer. It's a matter of finding whatever balance that you value, that your team values, and figuring out what that means, what that player can bring to a game, what that player can impact in a hockey game.
Patrice Bergeron, who does he play for, Matt?
The Boston Bruins. Oh,
We will see them soon.
But not Patrice. He's out for the first
game. Shame. So we did want to wrap this up. And again, all of this is going to be in the show notes. Wherever you found this podcast, there will be show notes with a lot of these links. Or please visit BuckeyeStateHockey.com.
If the notes are truncated, which they are sometimes, feel free to visit the website. The post for this podcast will have all these links.
Absolutely. But we wanted to just share with you some of the sites you probably, again, if you're following us or reading us, you have heard of these sites before. But we just wanted to share with you some of the key ones that we go to most frequently and what we use them for. And Matt, you want to go first?
Sure. My absolute favorite of all of them is HockeyReference.com. It is part of Sports Reference, which includes Baseball Reference, a wins above replacement resource. It has loads and loads of data about just point scoring, but in the past year or two, they've also added a lot of the Corsi and Fenwick information, which makes it a real catch-all for me, so I love it. And they also have a play index, which you can lose yourself in forever. You can click and select options for what players have the most goals scored in particular date ranges, what players have the highest relative Corsi percentage over certain amounts of time. It's fun for playing around and thinking about where players rank compared to each other.
Matt loves that site, if you can't tell.
I use it all the time.
Another site that I use a lot, particularly in-game, is a site, naturalstattrick.com. It's super easy to use. It'll give you Corsi and Fenwick info by teams and individuals. They've just announced today, in fact, a bunch of improvements to the site about using some more of the scoring chance information that I talked about earlier, and also score-adjusted information and how they're doing that, and some quicker refreshes. Natural Stat Trick is one of the sites I use in-game. And that's an important thing that I like to note for folks, is that this is a great site to go to in-game to get real-time information on players and the teams.
Natural Stat Trick and HockeyStats.ca are both really good in-game resources.
Indeed.
You may have seen one or any of us tweet pictures of graphs that show the shot progression over the course of a game, either plus minus back and forth or two lines building throughout the game. Those are both fun ways of thinking about how shots have evolved over the course of a game, who was doing what when.
Absolutely.
And both of those sites have those resources.
You want to talk about our next one, Matt?
Yes. Corsica.hockey. Friend of the podcast, Manny Perry.
We love you, Manny.
Arguably the most comprehensive source for Corsi and Fenwick data. Loads and loads of different ways of customizing the layouts. The most goalie data, I think, that's humanly imaginable. You can download files and turn them into Excel sheets or whatever matrix programs you like, and start playing with data yourself if you want. And there are also a lot of neat visualizations that help. Manny had worked on War on Ice, which is a now shuttered website, and this is the best successor to that right now.
That's right. And Corsica does have game info as well.
Mm-hmm.
Corsica, it appears, is sticking to regular season NHL games, whereas sites like Natural Stat Trick and HockeyStats.ca did both the World Cup and preseason. So just fun for sourcing different phases of data.
It is worth noting, now that you mention it, if you're playing around with some of these, some of the sites do have options to look at playoffs or not playoffs,
yep,
so always look around for that box if you need to check that or not.
Awesome. The next site, and if you know me, you know that I am a huge fan of this site, but one that we love is HockeyViz.com. There is a huge progression in visualizing a lot of this data, and I think that's so key because I'm not a mathematician. I'm not a scientist. I understand the concepts. And visuals make it really easy for me to understand what all the numbers mean. And I think it's the easiest way to share that with others so that they can understand that too. HockeyViz is by the wonderful Micah Blake McCurdy. He does beautiful visualizations of players, teams. He does game data at the conclusion of every game. He does historical strips looking at what a player has done with their career. He gives tremendous information post-game at a player level. He'll show you exactly where each shift was, who was on the ice with. I mean, it's just incredible. And he will also, he's one of the most diligent of the mathematicians, statisticians.
I think mathematician is right in his case.
That writes up a lot of the work that he does. And Mike also has some fun with us and does some preseason predictions and does some season prediction models, that it's always fun to watch how those play out.
Definitely.
Next site.
Next site. I'm going out of order.
Oh, okay.
Hockey Analysis, which is run by David Johnson. It's another really great source. He also runs Puckalytics, which is the sibling site, same database, just one is prettier than the other. I'm an old person in terms of my mentality, I'm stuck on using Hockey Analysis. It's a good place to particularly sort things based on performance per time on ice.
Awesome. And we mentioned hockeystats.ca already, but I want to give them another plug. I praised visualization so heavily, and that's a great site also in-game because you can change the graphs to show you the different states, like we talked about, to show some different numbers. It's fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. And then the final site that we just wanted to talk about very quickly is not so much a data site, but perhaps what I would say is the go-to site for innovative hockey thought right now, and that's hockey-graphs.com. This is the brain trust of hockey minds right now that aren't already hired by teams.
Yes.
And this is where you're going to see innovative work like the Passing Project. You're going to see breakdowns of special teams play. Pretty much all of my favorite writers after the Buckeye State hockey team are at Hockey Graphs, and I read everything they write, sometimes 3 and 4 times. And if you want to dive more into what's being explored, this is the place for you.
So 3 more things that we will link to. If you have gotten somewhat interested in this, or if you found us incredibly confusing, there are 3 more resources that are really great text primers on hockey stats and ways of thinking about them. One is by an author with the screen name Jibble Scribbits.
Clearly.
That's a Colorado Avalanche blog. He has a great introduction to fancy stats. That's what it's called. Well worth your time to look at. He explains step by step a lot of what goes into mining the statistics and that kind of thing. The other one is by noted podcast guest Down Goes Brown.
Woohoo!
Back when he was at Grantland, he wrote The Faker's Guide to Advanced Stats in the NHL. And spoiler, it makes you less of a faker for reading it because it's really, really good.
Aww.
And then the last resource is a name we have mentioned several times already. When Eric Tulski was not a member of the Carolina Hurricanes staff, he wrote a lot of stuff at SB Nation. And the site, or blog, I guess, Outnumbered, gathers all of his writing from SB Nation, which includes at their Flyers blog, in one place. And his writing is so easy to read. It's very clear. It gets the point across. So it's a good way of jumping on board if you're looking for something specific.
Absolutely. Well, if you're still listening, we know we've gone through a lot of information, probably pretty quickly, but we would love to hear from you guys. We'd love to hear questions you have about what we said or things that you've heard about or seen that we didn't talk about, or anything that you want to learn more about or that you think we're full of bunk on. Mm-hmm. And we're happy to do that even just with you via email or via Twitter conversation or whatever works. Our goal here was to hopefully start the season off with a good foundation of understanding and some of the information we use and resources we use. And we'd love to share more of whatever the people want.
Absolutely. And next week, we'll probably get back more toward regular Blue Jackets
coverage. Well, there'll be hockey to talk about.
It's true. It's happening.
Now, before we go, Matt, do you have a plug?
I don't.
Well, I do.
Oh.
Can you come up with one?
Maybe.
So I just, in the spirit of everything we talked about, and for people who are really into stats and analytical thinking about hockey, a lot of the people's name who we mentioned are not only brilliant, but they were very giving of their time and knowledge. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Tor Purdy, who was one of the first people that Matt mentioned. We lost Tor because he chose to take his own life. And so my plug would just be to always remember to talk to someone if you're not feeling like you're in a good place, because just like Tor was so valuable, each of you is valuable, and we'd love to keep you around.
That's a great plug.
Thanks.
I will leave that plug then. We don't need another one.
Okay. Well, thanks guys for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Let us know if you did or not. Let us know if you have any other follow-up questions, and we will talk to you next week.
As always, you can find us on Twitter at BuckeyeSTHockey. You can find the website, BuckeyeStateHockey.com, where this post will be if you want to find the links. And be sure to subscribe on iTunes. We're there. Search Union Blue Radio. We're on most Android things, I think, including Google Play. just search. I use Podcast Addict. That's where I get it. So thank you for listening.
Wait, you can follow Matt at ZeekBud on Twitter. You can follow Sam at Sam underscore Blazer. And you can follow me at Allison L. And until next week, bye.